B-Pod Studios.
You want to talk sports in Boston? You talk to these guys.
I'm just going to say something quick. If you want to get everything, just go see Big Al and Reveal.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Name one other song by The Outfield.
We used to all be able to do it. There was one other song that we all could name, but now I can't remember it.
Phil looks smarmy today.
It's not nice. Is it his lighting?
Yeah, look, he's got that stupid look on his face, like rolling his eyes.
What is it?
Got that smirk on.
What is it that...
That stupid letter M behind it. What's the M stand for?
We'll get to that in a moment. This week's Finish Strong Friday Spotlight happens right now, so... The Finish Strong Friday Spotlight is New England's defense. Good luck defending your home this weekend. 128 will keep homeowners safe. You guys just focus on Foxborough. Finish every job strong. Call 128.com. Phil, how we doing?
Good afternoon, boys. What's going on?
Well, speaking of defense, speaking of this matchup this weekend, I think a big concern of most fans is that the Patriots have looked pretty sloppy against the run to this point. And this weekend, there is a pretty good back on the other side by the name of Alvin Kamara. What do you make of that matchup, and how big of a focal point will that be for the Saints coming into this game?
Pretty good back and a pretty good pair of tackles that the Saints have. It might be the best tackle tandem in football. A lot more questions on the interior of the offensive line for the Saints going into this one, but it's a pretty good group. And in all honesty, I think the way that both of these offenses have to approach games right now is pretty similar, because neither team is built to be real explosive at the moment. That's sort of Jameis Winston. He is sort of the definition of no risk it, no biscuit under the Bruce Arians style of play there. But they don't have the weaponry to be able to come back in football games. And I think the Patriots are sort of in the same boat. If the Patriots get behind, I think they're in trouble. If they keep it close, if they play with a lead, good on them. They'll be okay. The Saints are sort of in the same spot. And that's never really how we've thought about a Sean Payton coached team before. But they need Alvin Kamara. They need him to be the guy, because if he's not, they don't have a whole lot else to lean on. This is a last place team in football in terms of total offense, believe it or not. It's just yards per game. They're a little bit more in the middle of the pack in terms of points, but again, that's not the Saints we're used to seeing.
Yeah. I was shocked.
They're just at a bad spot when it comes to their roster right now.
I was kind of shocked when you and Tom were going over this, listening to you guys, because I think part of it too is NFC ignorance. You know, we study the AFC team so much because that's what you're used to playing. And oh, you say, okay, the Saints are coming to town. We've seen them in joints before, but that was always Drew Brees-led teams, you know, with big receivers. And you think Sean Payton is going to, you know, sort of hide some of their inefficiencies. But you guys think that, you and Tom think that the Patriots on paper are better than the Saints as a team, right?
Definitely. I mean, I would say the one position where the Saints might have the decided advantage is at tackle there. I mean, those guys are great between Ramczyk and Armstead. Those are probably the two best teammates at right and left tackle in the league. But otherwise, I mean, look at this receiving group. Without Michael Thomas, it's Marquez Callaway, Lil Jordan Humphrey, Deontay Harris, Assumption Zone, Deontay Harris, and he's a really talented guy, so I don't want to feel like he's being diminished in any way, shape, or form. Small guy, but he is lightning fast. And Matthew Slater had all kinds of praise for him yesterday. He said he's basically Darren Sproles as a returner. So, you know, there's some threat there offensively. And it's Chris Hogan. I mean, it's a bunch of undrafted guys from the last 3 years and Chris Hogan. That's their receiving group right now. So if you
kind of like
survive,
what you've been, that's kind of what we've been for like the last couple of years of Brady's end. You know,
I said this on the podcast the other day. This is one of the probably one of the few receiving groups in football where you could look at it definitively and say, "Oh, the Patriots are certainly better than this team at that position." And Jameis Winston is still Jameis Winston. Like, you know, he is who he is. He's pretty deep into his career now. He's not the guy you saw week one, even though that game was a little bit of an odd game. If you actually watched it and watched how the game played out, he threw for 5 touchdowns, yes, but he also threw for about 150 yards in that game, I think. It just a lot of short fields, a lot of bad turnovers by the Packers. So I honestly think he's closer to the guy we saw in week two than the guy we saw in week one. He's probably more safely somewhere in the middle, but this is a team that you should have a lot of success against when they are forced to pass. So that'll be the key for them. Get out in front, put the game in Jameis's hands, let him give you a couple chances to make some turnovers and try to run away with it.
Phil, why do you think they've struggled, the Patriots, that is, on that side of the ball, stopping the run the way they did a week ago?
It's a great question because they're so deep up front. I mean, they should be, it should not be a personnel issue. And I think that's essentially what it is right now, is just as much as you thought you would from somebody like Devon Godshaw. You know, you haven't gotten what the salary would say that maybe you should be getting out of somebody like Dietrich Wise, who was re-signed this offseason. So I think it's just a matter of the players that you have playing better. It's not like there is one glaring issue that is the reason for everything that's happening in the run game. I mean, we've seen even Matt Judon, who I think has had a great two games. There have been games where he's gotten run over on the edge. We've seen moments where Josh Uche has been out there for a running play, and there aren't that many of them. But where he has lost the edge and lost it pretty significantly and led to big gains. So it's a little bit of everything right now. I think they're still just trying to figure out what the best mix is. And listen, the best way to do that is, again, to get out in front and just force them to pass, so you're not put in those situations. I thought, you know, week one was pretty interesting because week one, they only allowed 3.2 yards per carry, right? It was just when the Dolphins had the opportunity to run away with the win, literally run away with it at the very end, and everybody in the stadium knew that the Dolphins, you couldn't stop them. And so that to me is interesting, because this is, again, this is a group that's pretty deep, so they shouldn't be all that tired by the end of games. And I think they've got several guys that I would consider tough players, and that's a toughness moment. That's a mental toughness and a physical toughness moment, whether you're at the goal line or it's the 4-minute offense on the other side, and everybody again knows what's coming. Can you stop it? And I thought this group would be able to do that. They haven't through two games just yet.
I thought one of the bright spots was Bentley on the north-south stuff. Now, where he kills you is east-west, you know, when things go outside and he gets sort of swallowed up inside. But, like, the run blitzes seem like they work when they send him. And not that it's totally disruptive, but I think that helps the middle with Godchow. You said something interesting with Uche. You said, okay, he was in there against a couple of runs. Is he more of a third-down guy like Winovich?
Totally.
Yeah.
I think that's his role now.
I thought he had more power, more strength, you know, that he would be better against the run than Chase would.
He's just not a huge guy. So,
yeah.
You know, Judon's 265.
Yeah, I know.
Uche's probably 245, 250, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
So it's just a little different build. He's sort of the sports car on the edge. And, you know, I think he's really good in that role. If you look at some of the advanced numbers, you know, his pass rush win rate, he's near the top of the league. So if you can get, again, if you can get the opposition in situations where they're dropping back to pass because they have to try to come back from a lead, he'll be great in that situation. He'll, I think, provide consistent pressure in that situation. Matt Judon last week was the same way. Both these guys had big fourth quarters because the Jets were forced to throw. They were way behind. So if you can do that, that's great. I think we're still waiting to just learn a little bit more about the run defense. And I should give them a little bit more credit. I said earlier, in the situations where everybody knows the other team's going to run it, you got to be able to step up. They did do that on the goal line the other day. Lawrence Guy makes a stop right at the goal line on third down, and they force a field goal from the Jets. So good on them for that. But I think they're probably just looking for a little bit more consistency right now.
All right, we'll pick it up on the other side with Phil, including some discussion of the Patriots offense, Mac Jones, Josh McDaniels, everything that was going on this week as it relates to those two guys going forward and what we might see different in this game on Sunday against the Saints. We'll do that with Phil coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
To date at work.
Rose. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, you'd know it if
you
smelled
it. You'd know it if you smelled it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I trust him completely. And so I think, and again, kind of to piggyback off of Mike's question, and I understand your question too. I think there's a lot that goes into each decision. And again, look, I'm the first one to say that I could do a better job at a number of things, you know, as I look back at what I've done the first game, the second game, and how we want to try to grow and evolve as the season goes on in terms of a lot of areas of our offense making progress. But I think you know, protection is one of them. You know, the discussions you have to, you know, be aware of. Blitz, is there a lot of pressure, you know, coming at you? Can you hold the ball? You know, are you able to do things with certain protections to add time to your pocket?
Josh McDaniels this week on Mac Jones, rookie quarterback, who has yet to throw a ball to the end zone and has been criticized for not pushing the ball downfield more. Don't know how many opportunities have existed for him to do that, but Phil, where does it start for you? For me, it's with the offensive line. They've got to protect Mac Jones better than what they have through 2 weeks for him to be able to do that.
I'm with you. That's, to me, where it starts, and I think that impacts some of the other things that factor into the lack of throws down the field, whether it's play calling from Josh McDaniels. Well, okay, why is Josh McDaniels calling as many screens as he's calling? To, I think, temper the opponent's pass rush. You know, last week against the Jets, we saw kind of 7 or 8 screens.
The double screens too.
And yet a couple more that were essentially, you know, bubble passes that kind of function as screens, where maybe you have a second option, maybe you don't. You know, at the end of the day, the guy had almost a third of his dropbacks result in a screen pass. And that's to help offset an aggressive rush on the other side. And I think part of the reason Josh McDaniels felt he had to do that, I think the Jets are pretty talented up front, but he also knows that their protection isn't where it should be. And he wants to make sure his quarterback isn't getting walloped. I mean, we talked about it last week. He got hit 11 times against the Dolphins. And then early in that Jets game, he got hit and hit hard twice on that first drive, I believe it was. And so you have to protect the guy. And so I think you can do that with some play calling. It looks like conservative play calling, but it's to keep the quarterback upright. I think the offensive line also factors into the quarterback maybe being sped up a little bit. And the one clear, obvious example of that is where Hunter Henry is streaking down the field with his hand in the air for a walk-in touchdown. And Mac Jones, it looks like, is looking in his direction. He must have been looking at Jacoby Myers, who gets jumped at the snap and double-teamed in what was an obvious coverage bust by the Jets. But I think because he's a little bit sped up, maybe because he's been pressured as often as he has, he misses the obvious option B to when you see that as a quarterback. Okay, the guy that I'm looking at first has been doubled. What is that next to him and now running down the field? I think if he had better protection, he's able to go through that process a little bit more smoothly and hit Hunter Henry for a touchdown, and the numbers look a lot better, and maybe some of the criticism about throwing down the field isn't quite what it is. But I've talked to people all week, and we did it on the Next Pats podcast this week too. Talked to JT O'Sullivan, who, you know, 10 years as a pro quarterback and spent a little bit of time actually here in New England in the quarterback room in 06. And we went through a bunch of plays where I thought Mac Jones had more of an opportunity to throw it down the field. Maybe he was pressured. Maybe he wasn't. I'm not sure what the coverage is or what the read is. And what JT O'Sullivan was able to do was say, well, no, the read is actually this on this play. If the cornerback goes deep, you throw to the flat, you throw to the check down. That's the read. That's how the play works. And so there were a handful of instances where it looked like maybe he could push it down the field and he didn't. He throws the check down instead, but he's not being conservative. He's not being safe. He's going where the read takes him. And so if I'm a Patriots fan, I'd be pretty encouraged by that because it feels like he's just making the right decisions. It's just those right decisions end up being short throws at times.
See, I think Bedard said this too. Like after you got the 22 and you see it up from above, the general feeling is Mac Jones had a better week one than he had than a week two. Where after you watch the week two game, like, oh, he was okay in this game and he's getting better. Like, what's Trent Brown doing in this game? Is he going? What's your inkling? Well, what's it tell you?
Well, first, I would just say that's the same thing I've heard this week is that Mac Jones might have left more meat on the bone in week one than he did in week two, which wow. surprised me. Again, that was my feeling coming out of that game.
I thought
game
he was good this past week, like, calling the game, watching it from above, because I didn't see guys, other than I missed Hunter Henry on that one, but other than that, I didn't see a lot of guys open. So I
thought he might be able to hit Henry again in the red zone. There was a red zone play. It was third down in the red zone, and he ended up throwing to James White for a loss of one. And I'm looking at it saying, man, that's a 4-point play. That's the difference between a touchdown and a field goal right there. And you threw it to a covered check down for a loss of one, as opposed to trying something into the end zone. And the way it was explained to me was, well, no, they're in 5-man protection because you can see David Andrews do this before the snap. And when it's 5-man protection, that guy, if he's right there in the middle of the field and he blitzes, that's your guy. And so as soon as he sees him come, the proper move there is to throw it to your hop, the guy in the flat, for maybe a loss of yardage. But that's where the read took him. I think Trent Brown getting him back this week, and I mean, he's practiced all week, so different from that week, an upgrade from that from last week, I should say, in that regard. And you need him. I will say this, though. Right tackle is not the only issue. You know, it's an issue, no doubt, run game, pass game, but it's not the only issue. I think Isaiah Wynn needs to play better.
Left tackle's been an issue, too.
To me, it clearly has been, and it's not just the penalties. Everybody hears it when they call 76 for a flag, and it's happened a couple times as the Patriots have been threatening the last 2 weeks, threatening to score and maybe improving those red zone numbers a little bit. But I went through and looked at, you know, for instance, to me, we talk a lot about the pass protection, right, for obvious reasons. But the run game hasn't been what I expected it to be. You know, this was supposed to be a team that was going to maul you to death, that was going to run when it wanted to run because it's just bigger, stronger, tougher than you at the line of scrimmage. And that's not what they've been through 2 weeks. They're a middle of the pack running game. You know, 4.2 yards per carry. Okay, that's pretty good. It's 16th in the league. Do we think this is going to be a 16th in the league running game?
No, I got to be honest with you, though, Phil. I think that those numbers are deceiving because I think that the running backs have had to put in a lot of work because their offense is known to other defenses as being sort of one-dimensional now. I think those have been some hard-earned yards at that 16.2. I think in terms of the eye test, they've looked pretty good. But I agree with you.
They've been okay. They've been okay, Beetle.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say that it's not like they're seeing loaded boxes every play, though. You know, they do. They see their share of 8-man boxes, but it's not all the time. And for 12 of their 24 runs last week against the Jets, again, I think that's a pretty good front. Is it a great front? No. 12 of their 24 runs went for 2 yards or less. I mean, that should be something that you can avoid just by having the personnel that you have up front. And again, it's not just the fact that you're missing Trent Brown, went all up and down the line. You know, David Andrews, who I've had a hard time finding a bad play from David Andrews through the first couple weeks. You know, even he on the goal line, I think he might have stepped on Michael Wenu's foot, and that's a mistake. It's not an intentional thing, and I don't even know if they would consider that a mistake in the meeting room. But you know, it's every single player up front has led to at some point in time, and it's going to happen. But to have 50% of your runs go for, you know, what are almost negative plays. I mean, a 2 yard gain on first down isn't really helping you all that much. That's a problem. And so they've got to get that fixed.
I would also say they can't abandon it, and they know it.
No, you definitely can't.
And they have to keep running the football now. In previous years, I mean, not last year, but in other years, you'd see the Patriots try and throw their way out of it. Now they can't do that. They're not capable of it yet.
Well, and the other issue here too is, right, you know, Trent Brown, he's already missed time. You have to assume Isaiah Wynn's going to miss time too. It's just who both of these guys have been. Do you feel good enough about what you have at tackle behind those guys to move forward and be effective? Because at this point in time, just after talking to people around the league and okay, what might the Patriots be able to do at that position? Is there anything they can do? Could they add a depth piece just so they feel better about, you know, the inevitability of one of those tackles going down? What do you do? No, this is a figure it out with what you've got situation at this point in time, because good tackles are hard to find all the time. There are certainly not going to be teams that are willing to part with a good tackle at this point in time, even if that guy's a backup, because every team's tackle, you know, every team knows their tackles are probably getting hurt at some point in the year and your third guy's going to get in. And so until you get closer to the trade deadline and teams maybe fall out of it, this group is what it is. So do you feel comfortable with Yasir Durant and Justin Herron and Yadi Kajust having to play real time with those tackles being down? And they survived it last week, but they're going to have stiffer challenges ahead. And I think this is one of them, honestly. We haven't talked about the Saints defense really yet, but it's one of the best run defenses in football over the course of the last few years. And this is, again, what the Patriots are supposed to be building their entire offense around. So how does it look? Do you get Brown back? These are some of the biggest questions to me going into this week.
All right, 617-779-0985. We've talked about both sides of the football. Let's get some of your thoughts with Phil Perry joining us for the rest of this hour and everything from this week. That includes the back and forth with Tom Brady and his trainer and his dad. That's in the mix. Julian Edelman to be honored on Sunday in Foxborough. We'll get Phil's thoughts on that coming up as well, so don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Putting you in the middle of the story.
Bob and Easton, Bob.
In the middle of the day.
You know why I love this show?
Zolak and Bertrand.
Because I have ADD. 38 seconds.
So do I.
I'm talking about Greer and Shanahan to Zolak TikTok. 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
Wow.
I kind of remember this now.
Yeah.
Never heard this in my life.
Oh, my God.
It's a good song.
Sounds like them.
Coming up at 11:50. Wait, we missed it. I thought it was 12:50, T-Bone. We missed it. Coming up at 12:50. That would be correct. Sorry for the confusion. Coming up at 12:50, we're giving away a $50 gift card to Hooters. That's next segment. So you want to be
nice
for that. Sorry, Phil, you're not eligible. You can't win.
That's okay.
Let's go to the phones, shall we? Paulie in the truck for Phil Perry. What do you got this week, Paulie?
Hey, Phil, a couple of things on one on offense, the other on defense. But quickly, first, I just want to tell you, you really come into your own this year as an analyst. You really improve. Hanging around with Brett Brown is really doing you a world of good. Yeah, I put you right up there,
Paulie,
the top shelf with him right now, brother. You're really doing a great job from the draft right on down to the Mac Jones stuff. You're real, you know, and you know, boy, when you make your analyzation, you're not telling people what you think they want to hear.
Yep.
You're telling them the way it is.
The
now, two
is.
Things. Number one, the defense. I want to ask you about Collins. You know, they pick up Collins. I think it's a good idea because they're going 3-4 a lot. You can always use that extra body and linebacker with a guy that knows the system that can play inside, outside, cover, play against the run, rush the passer. He can do it all. So I think you take him. On the offensive line, I think they're going to start this failed experiment with my making Isaiah Wynn a left tackle, a tackle in the National Football League, and, you know, and thinking they're smarter than everybody else. I said, after you get a right tackle, you got to put him, kick him inside back, inside the left guard.
Yeah.
And you need to put Trent Brown.
Put him inside. Put him inside or outside.
That left tackle.
Who are you going to put outside?
When
you put him
you're
outside.
The right tackle, or when you're starting to struggle with God,
yep.
He was doing great at right tackle, you leave him there. So when and you.
Tell off, he said I.
You catch all that shuffling on the offensive line there, Phil?
Put that in your breakdown, Phil. We can do
you know,
that
I thought Paulie
now.
Made a lot of great points, especially in like the first 10, 15 seconds of that call right there.
Well,
that was I kind of fell off after that.
Mm.
But appreciate you, Paulie. No, yeah, there's a lot going on. I don't know if you want to move your left tackle pretty an issue is the thing. You can put Trent Brown at left tackle and then use one of your backups at right tackle. I don't know. I guess.
I thought you said put him inside. Put said, take him outside, put him inside. You put the inside guy outside. You put the inside guy there.
So you could put Owenu. You could put Owenu back at right tackle.
That's
right?
What he was suggesting. He was saying Owenu at right tackle, and then you move Wynn inside to guard.
I just know they're not hot on that idea. I think they see Mike Owenu as a guard, and if they need a tackle in an emergency sort of situation, he could do it. But I think they would like to keep Mike Owenu there.
Karras can play guard.
So we're also not going to see the Ted Karras into the lineup.
Yep.
That absolutely. Joe just mentioned.
I don't think so. That's just my understanding of it is they you know, unless there's an injury and it's a different situation. But, you know, I think Owenu is your left guard and they would like to keep him there.
Well, it might get so bad at some point they have to do something. But if Trent Brown gets healthy and he's able to play, and Phil, do you think he's playing this weekend?
If I had to guess, I would say he does. You know, he started practicing last week. It's oftentimes the progression that we see. You see a guy come back to Friday practice. He doesn't play in the game on Sunday, but then he gets a full week of practice. And he's been limited this week. He's been limited with the calf, but he's been out there every day. I would say that's usually a pretty good sign. I still go back to the day he hurt it. It wasn't like they brought him back into the locker room and he was done for the day officially very early. He was in his pads standing watching, just trying to keep it warm, it looked like.
And he was trying to go. I saw him taking a couple dropbacks and stuff. Like he tried to go on it. They tested him on the sideline.
Yeah. So like I would say that's a good sign. I just think this is something that you're going to have to monitor throughout the course of the season, because even if Trent Brown comes back week three, odds are you're not going to have Isaiah Wynn and Trent Brown out there together for the duration of the season. Like I go back to, you know, when they had a great setup in 2017. I don't know if you guys remember that year, but both Solder and Vollmer got hurt that year. They had to start four different tackles. The two guys that they put in at different points of the year were Adrian Waddle,
yep,
and Cameron Fleming. And those names aren't going to get anybody excited, but both those guys had over a year of experience in the Patriots system going into that season. They started and won games and were not a problem at all. And they got all the way to a Super Bowl year. 2015 is sort of the opposite end of the spectrum, where they had very little depth. You had a bunch of injuries up front. You had Brian Stork playing tackle at one point that year. And you had all sorts of bodies in and out. I think they set a record for offensive line combinations, at least for the previous decade of football leading up to that 2015 season. So that's not where you want to be. Do you feel comfortable and confident in the guys you have behind your two top tackles? And I think they're still getting there. I asked David Andrews about this the other day. They just need more time together. Justin Herron's in his second year with the team. You know, Yanni Kajus hasn't played at all. You have Yasir Durant, who they traded for just a few weeks ago. So odds are those guys are going to have to play, and they're just going to need more reps before anybody feels good about where they are, because they haven't been the group that we thought they would be coming into the season just yet.
Katarina's in Berlin. Hi, Katarina.
Hey guys, so just to start, Zoe, I feel like you've been getting a lot of crap this week, and I just want you to know, ignore it and never change.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Of course, of course. But on to my point. So the Julian Edelman party we're having on Sunday, I think it's a 30-70 combination here. 30%, Jules went out on kind of a bummer. You know, he was hurt. It was COVID. It wasn't the way you wanted to see someone like Julian Edelman end his NFL career. But I think 70% of it is more that he's clearly been Team Patriots since he's left and since Brady's left. He distanced himself a little from Brady. Not a lot, still publicly nice, but he stepped back a little. And he's always been, oh, I'll be Foxborough forever. I'm never leaving the team. And, you know, now you don't have Brady. He's going to retire a Buck. So I think the focus is all on Edelman because he's the guy who stood by the franchise.
Excellent call. Top to bottom. Whole call.
Yeah, so
Edelman has not been involved in any back and forth. He has no enemies in all of this, and he still remained close with ownership. And Bill has praised him this week, talking about how great of a career he had and the work ethic of a guy like Edelman. So
you forget last year, the fan part of it, I think she brings up a good point there.
He didn't get a proper send-off. He didn't get anything.
Because he's too good a player not to get one.
And he fizzled out and had an injury and, you know, sucked.
Yeah.
All the way around. Bad year. So I get that. I get why that would be a sort of a way to, I don't know, use an exemption, if you will, because this is not typical to have a guy who's retired come back immediately after retiring in week three of the following season. It's nice. I mean, there's never a bad time to see Julian Edelman.
No.
Sure. We got to talk to him the other just yesterday. We had a nice little back and forth.
Oh.
What would you ask him?
I asked him what his advice for Mac Jones would be now that he's sort of been he's won a leadership position with the team, and that's kind of rare for young players here in New England. And his advice, I think, would be the advice that Bill Belichick would love for Julian Edelman to give him, which is just put your head down and do everything that coaches tell you to do.
It's kind of what he's doing.
If Bill Belichick had one thing that he could have Mac Jones do, that probably would be it, right?
Yeah.
And it does seem like that's what he's doing. Yeah. It does seem like that's what he's doing. We've heard very little from him in terms of, you know, talk about ignore the noise. I think this guy's 23 years old. I think he's been fairly quiet on social media really since he was drafted, other than I think he posted an ad a few weeks ago on Instagram, and yeah, otherwise you don't hear much from him unless it's a media obligation or, you know, he's actually on the field. So I'm sure that's exactly what they're looking for.
Paul's in Rhode Island. Paul.
Hey guys, thank you for taking my call.
Hey Paul.
Oh, what is it? Hi Hottie.
Hi.
My question for Phil is this. When these quarterbacks were out there on the market, what's his name? Jameis Winston was one of them, and Bridgewater, I think. I'm not sure. But I know Jameis was a free agent. Was it a money factor why maybe he didn't come here? And all our callers were calling about Jameis Winston.
They were?
All his callers? Our callers?
I don't know. Was Jameis Winston ever on the radar of the Patriots?
I don't think he was ever on the radar.
It was really
his
question.
The callers. But Bridgewater is interesting. I mean, he was available for trade. Yeah, that would have to happen with a trade. And what's amazing is, like, Carolina's paying $7 million to that. So his salary in Denver is what they're paying $3 million, and Carolina's picking up the other $7 million.
Well, I think if Winston were to have had interest here in New England, I think you start with the cost, right? I mean, he's not costing the Saints anything, and you know, that's another good indication of where the Saints were at this past offseason and what they were able to do. You know, they could have made it work. They did some really interesting things with their cap to make themselves cap compliant this year, but they're paying Jameis Winston $1 million basically this year. I guess they gave him a little bit of a signing bonus. So, you know, he's on basically like a $5 million contract to be their starting quarterback. And that's, I think, what you would have been looking at. If you didn't get a rookie that you liked, or you didn't think you were in position to get a rookie that you liked, and you didn't feel like you wanted Cam Newton to come in unencumbered this year, it wouldn't have shocked me for them to dip into the Jameis Winston waters just because of the cost and because of where they were desperate. I mean, he is obviously not the style of quarterback that Bill Belichick's looking for. The guy is way too risk tolerant, I think is a good way of putting it. He's willing to make every single throw, whether it's there or not. And that's not what the Patriots want, but they also were in kind of a tight spot. So it wouldn't have shocked me. But obviously, they decided to go in a different direction. Were people clamoring for Jameis Winston?
No, they weren't. No, I know.
Okay. That's Paul. I must have missed that.
That's Paul. That's
Hello,
Paul.
Guys.
Okay. You know. Coming up next, we're giving away a gift card to Hooters, so stay tuned for that and more with Phil Perry. We'll talk to RJ Bell at 1 o'clock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
To talk sports in Boston, you talk to these guys.
That will now be a recycled take.
Right.
It's a retake.
It's a reheated take. Microwave take.
Zolak and Bertrand.
Not good.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Right now, caller number 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. Will score a $50 gift card to Hooters, your pro football headquarters. Catch your favorite team at Hooters each and every Sunday, where they show all the games. Hooters, Dedham, Saga, Shrewsbury, and West Springfield. Hooters makes you happy this football season. Get that away right now to caller 10. Please call the contest line. Phil, what did you make of Tom Brady Sr. speaking with your partner, Tommy Curran, this week, and also Alex Guerrero and his comments to Karen Garrigan in the Boston Herald this week, and that followed up by Brady maybe trying to distance himself a little bit from those comments yesterday. What do you make of all this?
There's a lot going on there. I guess that's the first thing. It's just the volume of chatter that's coming from Brady and, you know, really more specifically his circle. I know he's not thrilled about it, and I understand that. I'm a little surprised there wasn't some sort of effort made to make sure that
that didn't happen.
Some of these things didn't come out. Maybe he was waiting for after his game this week against the Rams to say, oh, by the way, this is Patriots week, guys. Let's keep it on the down low. But it's obviously started early. So that number one is just the first thing that it's not quite as buttoned up, but clearly the people around Brady don't care if it's buttoned up. And I think that is just how strongly they still feel about how things went at the end here. I have a question for you guys, because there was one comment that Guerrero made to Karen in the Boston Herald that sort of caught my eye about how Brady basically wanted to be treated differently, right? Towards the end, he didn't want to be treated like he was 20 years old anymore.
Yeah.
And I think Guerrero is right. Like the players there probably would have been fine with it had Brady been treated a little bit differently. But do you blame Bill Belichick for, I guess, managing the room, managing his culture, if you want to put it that way, the way he did? Because
no,
I'm not sure I do. I would say I don't, because it works. It worked for him for, that way for a long time. Brady clearly was deserving of whatever, you know, if you want to put it in those terms, deserving of whatever kind of treatment he wanted. He accomplished a great deal. There's no question about it. But if you're the coach who wants to run things a certain way and you like the fact that you can talk to your quarterback and to the rest of the team, it's hard for me to blame Bill Belichick for wanting to get away from that, I guess, is my reaction. But am I in the minority there?
No. I don't know how you can have both. And when I say that, like, I went back and watched that NFL 100 where Tom was sitting at the table with Bill, and it was Eisen and Collinsworth. And they asked Bill the question about when you knew Tom was special. He said, yeah, his rookie year, he went up and down with the offense and that, and, you know, eventually led to the great work ethic Tom's had all these years. And then Tom followed it up with, man, the great thing about Coach is he will always do what's right for the team. He don't care if you're an F in first rounder. Second, like, he lived it. He was pick 199. Butzo already had the $110 million contract. So, by example, hey, I maybe outworked Drew, and it caught the coach's eye, and he's going to treat me the same way or even better than he treated Drew, put me in, and said, we're going to go with Tom the rest of the year. Then how can you say, okay, I want special preferential treatment at the end? See, I think this has to do with the offseason. What people keep talking about is Belichick lighting him up after, like, the Texans playoff win or another game or the Monday morning meeting. I think he knew that stuff's coming. Like, you're going to get that. I think it's the offseason. You're not here for – he's the only guy, like, wasn't around, NFL quarterback for his team's OTAs, throwing sessions. He wanted to be away from the facility. And I don't think they like that.
But I think at that point it was out of spite. That's what I think it was. I think you're talking about something that happened way later, because now that he's in Tampa Bay, he's been in every possible workout. So I don't think it's about wanting to take off time in the offseason. At that point, it was about not wanting to be around Bill and not wanting to be around this team.
I think that's part of it, too.
Phil, don't you think the Tampa example is partly because he's new to that team, though?
Yeah. Like he's got to instill culture there.
I think he's there because he felt like he needed to be there. He didn't feel like he needed to be there in New England.
What about this offseason? He came off a Super Bowl win.
It's still, he's in his second year. I don't know. I think it's a little bit different. I don't think it's apples to apples.
I mean, I get what you're saying. I mean, that is true. But I also think he's fully committed and fully bought in there because he likes the situation. And I think at the end here, he didn't like the situation and he was less bought in. But to answer your question, I don't know, Phil. I feel like Bill should not have been so rigid, and I feel like he's being left with the result now, which is you could either pick to have a do-over where you've already wasted away one season in resetting, and now you've got a rookie quarterback who, you know, is good and efficient to this point, But I don't know how far this team can go, and I don't know how many years it's going to be before he can get back to where Tom Brady currently is. And so to say, well, it's worked for him for so long. Yeah, it's worked for him when he had Tom Brady. It has. It worked great for him when he had Tom Brady. And let's see if it works when he doesn't have Tom Brady, if that's the way to go. And I think a little bit of what Tom and his people, including Guerrero for sure, were hinting at is that, you know, things are passing Bill by, that the league is not the same now as it was even 20 years ago when Tom Brady took over for Drew Bledsoe. That things have changed. Players' sort of power has increased in this league. It's not quite NBA levels, but players have more yank now than maybe ever before in this particular sport. And maybe he hasn't changed with that at all, and he's just kept doing things the way that he likes to do them. And maybe that catches up to him. Maybe Bill never comes close to winning another one and will someday regret it. I hope it's not the case, but it's a possibility right now.
I think it's gotten harder for sure for the Patriots to find players that are willing to take hard coaching. And I think one of, you know, Brady, obviously the vast majority of his value for the Patriots is what he did on the field. But I think part of what Bill Belichick found valuable in Tom Brady was that he was willing to take hard coaching and therefore set an example for everyone else in that building that it was okay to be criticized. How do you handle that criticism? How do you get better from it? And when that maybe started to wane, maybe that's where you started to see things change a little bit. I still think, the reason he's not here, I think, is primarily related to the contract and the fact that he's doing things at an age that nobody thought was possible, quite frankly. But I think there is this other, like, cultural fit. Was he a cultural fit by the end? I really don't think he was. And it's hard for me to blame either side because I understand Tom Brady wanting to be treated differently. And I understand Bill Belichick wanting to run his program a certain way because he had a lot of success doing it that way. So that, I think, is what's most interesting to me is we're hearing all this stuff. And, the fact that Tom Brady didn't want preferential treatment, you know, going all the way back to 06, you know, like the fact that they lasted 20 years is pretty remarkable given some of the things we're hearing now.
All right, Phil, appreciate the time. Looking forward to talking to you on Sunday prior to the game.
Sounds great. Talk to you then, Beetle. Zoe, have a great call.
See you, Phil. Thanks, buddy.
All right, Phil. Phil Perry from NBC Sports Boston is with us. I said NBC, looking at that M right behind Phil. All show long. We'll never
What's
know
he
what
he's
it is.
For.
Don't know. Big M.
I saw it at the beginning, and then I just kind of didn't notice it anymore. But
that would be NBC Boston. We'll talk to RJ Bell of pregame.com, Fox Sports Radio. That's after the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.